moment they hold a knife to his throat. He's gullible, naive. He might at the most suggest I withdraw the presence of the Church of the Godly from his borders, or attempt to extract a promise that I and my brethren will not seek to convert the people of the Birchlands to the faith, while he sits all unawares in the shadow of an enemy with the power to destroy not only his land but ours as well. An unhelpful response flashed through Alexis's mind. If your faith is so powerful, why not take your mission into the grasslands instead? Should you turn those folk to your ways? The one and only God would surely be impressed. I see, he said. What precisely is it you want from me, Excellency, other than advice on the matter? The bishop steepled his fingers, turning his gaze directly on Alexis. One day someone would make a stone statue of the man, and it would look just like this. Explain the situation to the ruler as soon as you get back to court. The information my men pick up when they are in the Birchlands cannot be sent to Lady Elisabetta in writing. Pass on to her what I have told you, and demand that she raises this at the Grand Council as a matter of urgency. A decision must be reached there, in Vidric's presence and before witnesses. We must prepare ourselves to stand together against the Grasslands, should the worst come about. We cannot have any dissent among the council members. For a few moments, Alexis could not wrestle his response into an acceptable form. Then, my role is advisor to the ruler, he said, governing his tone. An advisor offers advice. He does not make demands. Certainly, I will apprise Lady Elisabetta of your concerns and the basis of them, and will pass on your suggestion that this be discussed at the council. Of course, as a council member, you would be free to raise the issue yourself. It might be wise to let Lord Vidric know well in advance that this is what you plan. A message to him could be carefully worded so as not to reveal sensitive information, Excellency. I'm sure you are expert at such things. Something that might have been a smile passed fleetingly over the stony face. I want the ruler to raise it. By calling you here now and informing you of the matter in full, I am allowing her plenty of time to think it through and offer a well-prepared plan at the council. The threat is real, Master Alexis. Make sure Lady Elisabetta understands that. She should be aware of our order's capacity to support, or to lead, her forces in any action, or indeed to act alone should no such cooperation be forthcoming. That, of course, is highly confidential, for the ruler's ears only. The bishop rose from his seat while Alexis was still trying to take this in. Now, if you have no further questions, I have other business to attend to. Alexis, too, had risen. One did not remain seated when the bishop was standing. He had questions aplenty, but it would be wiser not to ask them. Thank you, Excellency. And as it seems our business is concluded, my men and I will head back toward Dragon's Keep today. I believe the ferryman is able to accommodate us. Thank you for your hospitality. Safe journey, Master Alexis. It was as Alexis stepped out of the chamber that the hallway's narrow windows shone momentarily gold, and a few moments later came the rumble of thunder. A spring storm come from nowhere. By the time he reached the guest quarters, he could hear the heavy drumming of rain on the roof. Take the horses on the ferry in this? Hardly. Unless the storm passed quickly, the paths would be a muddy nightmare, and the river crossings too dangerous to attempt. They might not even get away tomorrow. Curse it. No point in heading for the training ground. He prowled the room, his mind whirling with unsettling thoughts. Stasia, Lucas, Irina. The ruler so caught up in her desire for Amber that she seemed quite heedless of the damage she was causing along the way. Where had that come from? What had changed in Elisabetta that so often now she seemed willfully deaf to reason? He made himself sit down. With his head in his hands, he tried to summon his father's voice, a voice of kindness and common sense. Keep the balance, Alex. Keep the balance. 19. Stasia. Stasia had been mopping floors, scrubbing greasy pots, and generally making herself useful in the servants' quarters. Keeping busy helped the time pass more quickly. With luck, the ruler would not ask to see her again until Alexis and the others were back. Alexis had a way of calming folk down, giving them enough time to speak, explaining quietly instead of shouting the same thing over and over. Maybe all senior advisors were like that. It might be part of their training. Or maybe she'd misjudged him earlier on, just a bit. Irina was on her feet at last, ghost pale, but moving about. Stasia noticed her watching intently as Beruta prepared bread dough with the help of several strong-looking girls. Perhaps Beruta and the others did not know Irina had baked bread for a whole village. Maybe she could mention it now. Before she had decided whether that was a good idea or not, she found herself back in Elisabetta's council chamber, with the ruler asking the same questions, just with different words. There was no point in listening. Instead, Stasia told herself a tale in her head, about a loaf of bread that came to life, and started giving all the other foods in the kitchen crazy orders. She imagined Lucas listening, pictured his sweet smile. When the ruler struck her on the cheek, she was shocked back to awareness. Speak! Answer me! Elisabetta's voice was iron hard. Stasia could find no answer. She had not heard the question, and even if she had, what could she say? How long had she been standing here, off in a dream? Too long, it seemed, for the ruler was pale with fury, her hands clenched into white-knuckled fists. You will not return to the servants' quarters, she said. More appropriate arrangements have been made. The guard will escort you. Think over your situation with great care, young woman. Your lack of cooperation puts more than one person at risk. Go now. Stasia did not even attempt a bow. This woman might be ruler of the Northlands, but she was nothing more than a bully. A person like that should not be in a position of power. She was tempted to say so, but imagined Alexis watching and held her silence. The guard led her outside, not into a garden, but to a place that smelled of pigs, though she could not see any sign of them. The building they entered was barn-like, made from wood, and constructed hard up against the high outer wall of Dragon's Keep. Oddly, its doors were reinforced with iron. Now she could hear the animals grunting, and their uneasy thoughts flooded her mind. Where did my sister go? I heard screaming. They took my babies. They hurt me. I'm hungry. And other voices, rats somewhere close by, an owl perched in the rafters dozing. If she was being put in here, she'd have to ask them to bring Flip, who'd been left with Irina, but not now. The guard was explaining something. With an effort, Stasia shut out those other voices, the ones that came to her in silence. Sorry, what did you say? Wait in here for a bit, they're bringing the other one. The other one? The other woman, your friend, that came in with you. Before she could say a word, the man strode off, closing the outer door behind him. She heard the bolt slam shut. These folk must prize their pigs highly. Curse it. What was this? What was the point of it? At least she was on her own for a bit. She might as well have a good look around the place. Pigs would likely make better companions than some of the human folk of Dragon's Keep. The barn might even offer opportunities for escape. The man had said, "You'll be in there," and pointed to a closed-off area at the back. There was a door, bolted like the other one. She approached on cautious feet. Perhaps the boar was in there, though more likely not. She would have felt his presence. With her hand on the bolt, she opened her mind to whatever might lie beyond that barrier. I am a friend. I won't hurt you. She waited. The only response was a stirring among the rats, who might have many hideaways in such a place. Stasia drew a steadying breath and slid the bolt open. It was dark in there. Apart from the door, the only opening was a single high window opening back into the main area of the barn, too small to admit anything bigger than a bat or sparrow. This was probably a storage area, though it was empty now, save for a few wisps of straw on the earthen floor and a bucket in the corner. Was this really where she was supposed to stay? And Irina too? There was nothing here, and it was cold. Even if they brought her belongings and Irina's, even if they brought bedding, this would be... She imagined it with the door closed, at night, with no light at all. They couldn't do this. They couldn't. But of course they could. The ruler of the Northlands could do whatever she wanted. Stasia's heart was thudding. Dark images swirled in her mind. Irina cooped up in here, just when she was starting to come out from the shadows. Stasia herself shut in, helpless to do a thing. Or a terrible choice. Stasia agreeing to what the ruler wanted, because if she didn't, bad things would start happening to the people she cared about. Lady Elisabetta had hinted at that. Your lack of cooperation puts more than one person at risk. Irina, Lucas, Flip. Oh, gods. There might still be time to get out, to take action, to find Lucas, to... Every instinct called her to move, to find a way, even if it meant trying to break down a barred door. But no, that was foolish. And there was a more pressing need, one she could deal with if she was quick. She went back out into the barn, stood perfectly still, struggling to steady her breathing. In, two, three, four, pause. Out, two, three, four, pause. And again. Her mind reached for Flip, found her on the pallet in the women's quarters, half asleep. Flip? Move. Now. She showed an image of the dog transforming into a tiny wren, flying out from whatever window she could find. It was hard to show the way to the barn clearly. The walk here had been confusing. Instead, she showed pigs, thinking the smell would guide Flip. She showed an iron-barred door, herself within the barn, the roosting owl, the rats hiding away. Come here quickly. Don't let anyone see you. Stay as a bird. She willed the guard not to return and interrupt her until she was safely done. Watch out for the owl, she added belatedly. It might be daytime, but Hugh knew whether a hungry owl might still wake and see the visiting wren as a surprise meal. She paced, waiting. What if they went to take Irina before Flip had left the sleeping quarters? What if someone saw her change? What if... Stop it, she ordered herself. This might not be as bad as it seemed. When Alexis got back, surely he would... What? The ruler was the ruler. She gave the orders. He only advised. Yes, he'd made meeting Lady Elisabetta less of an ordeal for her, just as he'd made the ride to Dragon's Keep easier for Irina and Lucas. But hadn't he been carrying out the ruler's orders at every point? He'd brought Stasia here so the ruler could dig out her secrets and use them to reach the hermit for her own selfish purposes. All that talk about making life better for her people was nonsense. What about the folk of Hartwood, whose lives she had ruined? The ruler must consider them simple folk, too ignorant and lowly to matter. Stasia pictured Irina lifting a tray of perfect rolls from the oven, the firelight illuminating her features. Lucas, his hands strong but gentle, as he freed a goat that had become entangled in some bushes. Vidas grooming a horse in his stable yard, sharing a joke with Kirill, the two of them in gales of laughter. Christina bending her head over her needlework, and a delicate border of wildflowers unfolding on the linen as she stitched. Farmer Jorkis, addressing a village meeting, his voice strong and sure, his smile drawing in every person there. Simple folk, yes. Fine, good-hearted souls. A high twittering from above startled her. Flip flew in. The owl stirred, then slept again, and the tiny bird came down to alight on Stasia's shoulder. Good. At least she was safe. For now. Stasia showed her what had happened, warned her that the guard would be back, took her into the storage room and showed images of the three of them. Stasia, Flip and Rina shut in there. For that surely was what these people intended. Even if Alexis came back soon, and even if he had tried to persuade the ruler to let them return to the servants' quarters, Lady Elisabetta would only say yes if Stasia agreed to her plan. She would sooner die. For a moment, Flip was a dog again, rubbing against her legs, whining to be picked up. No, Stasia whispered. Bird. But she gathered the dog up anyway, holding her against her chest, dropping a kiss on her head, touching her soft ears. Bird, now! And Flip obeyed, flying up to perch high, but not too close to the owl. And just in time, for there were footsteps outside, and men's voices, then a scraping sound as the bolt was drawn on the barn door. They were here. The cold penetrated every corner. By night, it was enough to freeze a person to the bones. Stasia and Irina had one blanket between them, and a threadbare old thing it was. Stasia was close to breaking her own rules and asking Flip to change. On such a night, the warm dog would have been worth her weight in gold. But Irina did not know Flip was anything other than an ordinary dog, and Stasia would not risk revealing the secret, even to her. Besides, who knew when a guard might suddenly come into the barn and see a dog when there had been none? Stasia wondered if anyone out there had noticed Flip was missing, or if anyone cared in the least that she and Irina were suddenly gone from the servants' quarters. Maybe this kind of thing happened all the time at Dragon's Keep. It was too cold for sleep. The best way to get through the chill night would be by moving about and passing the time with conversation or stories. Since the two of them had been shut in here, Irina had huddled on the sparse straw, hugging the blanket around her, and saying only the occasional word or two. Here, when she'd offered Stasia a share of the blanket. That was earlier, when there had been enough light for them to see each other. Sorry, when she stumbled over Stasia after visiting the privy bucket. Now in the darkness, the sounds of pigs still came to them faintly. They were next door, Stasia guessed, in a separate enclosure, to one side of the building. They were restless, scared, deeply unhappy. She should reach out to them, offer comfort of some kind. It was hard to know what to say, what mind pictures to show. Perhaps they were awaiting slaughter. What story could a person tell that would be of any help? But she had to try. It was not only the wretched pigs who needed her, but also the woman shivering beside her. You keep the blanket, she said. I'm going to move around and try to get warm. The storage room was 6 paces long, 4 wide. As she walked to and fro, hands out in front to guide her, a story came to mind, sudden and startling. Should she tell it? Might it only make Irina sadder? Could the same story lift the hearts of both pigs and human women? Perhaps it was worth trying. She'd tell it in words for Irina, and at the same time make mind pictures for the pigs, and hope it helped both. Once, in the time of our grandmothers, and in a place not so very far away, there lived a mother who was strong and brave. She was not afraid of anything. Neither a noisy farmer, nor a heavy draft horse, nor the wild north winds could frighten her. Neither the deep pond, nor the dark storm clouds, nor the demands of her children disturbed her. She was the strongest mother in all the valley. A trace of moonlight showed itself beyond the small window, but within the chamber the darkness remained. Stasia sensed that Irina was watching her, but there was no reading her expression. High above them, Flip was following the story too. Stasia felt her thoughts. Yes, go on, and make this a happy ending. But the true story did not have a happy ending. Thomas could not be brought back from the dead. The young of the pigs had been taken away to an uncertain future. The sows were unlikely to escape a life in which such losses must be endured over and over, the only alternative being the swift knife and the stew pot. More, Flip urged, jolting her back to the tale. Life was happy, peaceful, busy, until disaster struck the valley, and folk died. With the pigs, she showed a farmer, herding them roughly into confinement, separating half-grown piglets from their mothers. The mother had been a leader. She had helped feed the folk of the valley, and had been a good friend to all. She was kind and thoughtful, and the son she raised had grown up to be a quiet, good young man, helpful and courteous. But a terrible thing happened, and the good son left that place forever, on a journey to another world. In the mind picture, a sow watched as her piglets were loaded onto a cart and taken away, the young squealing in distress, the sow calling, calling, as their voices faded away and the cart vanished down the road. From the pigsty nearby, there was no sound at all, but Stasia knew the pigs were awake and aware. The mother wanted to go with her son, to follow him, but on that road there was no following, so she sought the wisdom of the great goddess of creatures, herself sometimes called the Mother, who had the power to grant visions of past, present or future, of this world and the afterworld, and sometimes even the other world. Please show me my son, the mother begged. Show me where he is. Show me he is well and happy. In her mind, the mother travelled then a long, long way over stony ground, uphill and downhill. She walked in the rain. She walked in the freezing cold. She kept to the path through tempest and drought, one foot before the other. For even in visions, finding answers is not easy. At last, she came to a place like no other she had seen in her life, a place where warm light fell on fields of wildflowers, and strange birds flew overhead, singing in sweet voices. The mother knew without asking that she could go no further. To enter that place was to leave this world forever, and although she longed to take that one step forward, something held her back. She stood at the edge, and called her lost one's name, raising a hand in greeting. For although she could see no sign of him, she knew he was there. She sang a little tune she had sung when he was a baby, a song about rabbits in their burrows and birds in their nests that used to lull him to sleep. And when she was halfway through, another voice joined in, that of the lost son. With tears rolling down her cheeks, the mother sang with him, the whole song twice through, and by the end she could see him across the field with animals around him, pigs, goats, sheep, a flock of chickens, and never a squabble among them, and a beaming smile on his face as he waved back to her. Not only that, but there was a man with him, a familiar, beloved man, who now put his arm around his son's shoulder, a man who would forever be 5 and 20 years old, and a boy who would be always 11. There by his side was a faithful old dog whom she remembered well, a true companion. Oh, how she longed to run to them, but it was not her time. Her son was with his father. They were happy. The creatures were peaceful and content in that place, beyond the world she knew. This was what she had asked to see. She waved again and smiled through her tears, and then they were gone. She was alone by her hearth fire, in whose flames she had seen the goddess. The sorrow would never quite leave her, but she could make her peace with it. She could live her life. In the mind pictures, Stasia showed the Sows their lost ones in a broad green field with a mud wallow, a shelter, ample fresh water. She could not offer them a better life, but at least their minds might be set at ease for a little. They might dream kinder dreams. For some time after she finished, there was utter silence. Then Stasia felt Irina's arms around her and Irina's head against her shoulder and heard, through the sobs, Irina's soft words, "Thank you, Stasia. Thank you." 20. Stasia. We spoke before of Amber and of old tales. Are there any such tales that touch on its curative power? Today the ruler was speaking softly and wearing a kinder expression. Stasia wanted nothing more than to edge closer to the hearth fire. She was filthy, exhausted, and shivering after a night in that place. And Irina was still locked up there. No word of Lucas, no sign of Alexis yet. Best attempt some kind of answer. "There are some that I know of, my lady."
"Oh, you're talking today."
Lady Elizabeth's brows rose in mock surprise.
"Tell me one of these tales."
"May I sit down, my lady?" Her back ached. It was a struggle to stay upright.
"I will be strong. I must be.
Irina, Lucas, Flip, she had to find a way out for all of them."
"Sit, sit."
The ruler waved a hand toward the bench. Stasia sat. Her body was full of pain. How many such nights could she and Irina endure? Had the ruler really put them in that place deliberately? Or was that the act of some wayward guard? She wanted to ask, but because of the smile and the softer manner, she would tell a story instead. "Once, long ago," she began, her voice less than steady, "a race of uncanny folk lived in the depths of Hartwood Forest. They were tall and beautiful, fleet of foot and expert in magic, and the local people called them the Forest Folk. The race had been unseen by the human inhabitants of that place for longer than the oldest grandmothers could remember. But sometimes there were signs that the Forest Folk might have travelled a certain path, or bathed in a certain lake, or paused to admire a lovely shimmering birch, or to wonder at a tall larch whose head seemed to touch the sky itself." The ruler was listening, even without Alexis there to keep things calm. She poured a cup of mead and passed it across to Stasia. One sip was enough. It was balm to her dry throat, but too strong to tolerate on an empty stomach. Fresh water would have been more welcome. Stasia nodded, "Thanks." "People wondered why the Forest Folk chose not to show themselves. If they had the gift of magic, they surely could not be afraid of humankind, for magic gave power. It gave strength, or so people believed, though none of them had ever seen anything magical themselves, or if they had, they had not recognized it for what it was. For them, magic was frightening, a thing to be spoken of only in undertones or whispered behind the shield of a hand. In particular, a person did not mention it before priests or other church leaders, as that might bring down the most severe of consequences." A fleeting smile crossed the ruler's stern features.
"Go on," she said.
"There was a boy in the village who was known as Amber. Perhaps that was his true name, or perhaps it was a name folk had given him because he wore an amber token around his neck, strung on a cord. It was only a small thing, a scrap, smoothed by water into a shape something like a fish. Other children teased Amber, suggesting his real parents must have been forest folk, though everyone knew his mother was an ordinary village wife and his father a travelling merchant
who had stayed with her a while, then moved on. As for the little token, Amber had worn it since he was a baby. The odd thing was that he never got sick. Other children caught coughs and colds in winter. They had upset stomachs in the season of fresh fruit, summer agues, sore ears, skin rashes. Not Amber. Not ever. Lady Elisabetta was listening intently. Something about this had caught her interest. "Go on," she said, when Stasia paused to cough.
"Might I have some water, please? There was none left for us in the place where they put us."
"Paula?"
The sharp call made Stasia flinch. The maidservant came in. The ruler rapped out an order, and a flask and cup were fetched and placed on the bench within reach.
"Thank you," Stasia said, then drank thirstily.
The maid gave her an odd look, then bobbed a curtsy to Lady Elisabetta and went out. The story. Stasia drank again, then set the cup down. When Amber's mother fell deathly ill, the village was full of whispers. Nobody had ever asked the boy to share his necklace. It felt wrong to suggest this when the thing had perhaps been a gift from his long-absent father, or even, if by some chance the rumours were true, from a fey father the lad had never met. Over the years, the folk of the village, folk of all ages, had endured their illnesses. Some had recovered, some had perished, some had survived in a weakened state. But when it was the boy's mother who lay in the grip of some unknown malady, would it not be right, folk murmured, for Amber to take the token from his own neck, strung on the cord that had been lengthened as the child grew, and place it around his mother's? Did he not want to save her life? Nobody was quite prepared to ask Amber directly. All feared the consequences of speaking out. If only they could ask the forest folk, who knew and understood such things, or so the old tales suggested. But those folk of ancient story did not show themselves. Amber was by now 8 years old and devoted to his mother. He heard the whispers. He knew what people thought he should do. But he was scared. What if he saved his mother's life, only to die himself without the protection of the necklace? But that was selfish, wasn't it? There was nobody he could ask. His grandmother was there, tending to his mother, but he had always been a little afraid of her, with her moody silences and sudden outbursts of anger. She had more than once referred to him as spawn of the devil. He did not know what that meant, only that it sounded bad. So Amber crept around the cottage like a mouse and watched his mother grow sicker each day. He was desperate to help. But what if he gave her the necklace and everything went wrong? What if his fey father, if there really was such a person, appeared on the doorstep and dragged him off to the strange home of the forest folk? What if a devil came? While Amber was still trying to pluck up his courage, Grandmother too fell sick. There was nobody to help. Either folk were sick themselves, or they were busy tending to others, and the boy was left to cope on his own. He did the best he could, but it was too much for him to manage. The food ran out. The woodpile was down to splinters and scraps. He could not leave the house to seek help. What could he do? Grandmother was not as weak as Mother, and one morning, when Amber was trying to sponge her face with a wet cloth, her bony hand reached up, seized his beloved token, and ripped the thing right off his neck. He cried out. It hurt a lot. But he did not snatch it back. Indeed, could not, for Grandmother's fist was tight around it, and her rheumy eyes had a look in them that said, "Don't meddle with me, or you'll be sorry." She did not order Amber to take the token to his mother, to see if it would make her well again. No, Grandmother was keeping the thing for herself. Stasia paused for another drink of water. The ruler seemed spellbound by this story. She was waiting eagerly for more, sitting bolt upright on the very edge of her chair. Why had this one caught her interest? Did she believe that if Amber had the power to cure the sick, it would win her better trading profits? Best be careful with the ending.
The boy Amber could do nothing but go on chopping wood for the fire
fetching water, trying his best to keep the two women clean and warm. One thing did change for the better. The day after Grandmother stole his necklace, he opened the door to find a covered dish on the step. Someone had left food, a tasty porridge, enough for all three of them, with some left over. Beside it, a little jug of fresh milk. Amber did not question who might have left it there. Instead, he wept a few tears of gratitude and brought the wondrous gift inside. He coaxed the women to try the food while it was still warm. Grandmother was well enough to feed herself with a spoon if he held the bowl for her. Mother, he had to feed like a small child, mouthful by mouthful, and she only took a little. But when she was done, she reached out her hand and touched his cheek and murmured something that might have been, "Good boy." So it went on. Amber as housekeeper and nursemaid, the two women bedridden, and supplies that arrived each morning before sunrise. There was food to sustain the three of them, and also wood for the fire, neatly chopped and added to the woodpile, though they heard no sound of an axe. Perhaps neighbours were doing this, though they never had before. Or maybe someone else was helping, someone who did not belong to the village or to the human realm at all. Amber did not care. The only thing that mattered was getting his mother well again. And his grandmother, of course. The illness passed. The village lost 5 good souls that winter, but Amber's mother was not among them. She rallied and grew strong again, sustained by the mysterious meals and by her son's love and dedication. Grandmother was not so fortunate, though she too had eaten the food and received the loving care. She passed away in her bed, with the amber fish still clutched in her hands. Before she called for the village undertaker, Amber's mother sat him down for a serious talk. She had removed the token from the old woman's body and returned it to her son, reminding him to wear it hidden beneath his clothing. She thanked him for his love and care, and she said they should never, ever tell anyone about those meals or the firewood or any part that Amber might have played in events. "But," said Amber, "it was Grandmother who had my amber fish, not you. She wouldn't give it back to me. Yet she died, and you got better. Does that mean there's no magic?" Mother put an arm around his shoulders. "Maybe the magic is love," she said. "Or maybe the magic only works if it's used in the right spirit. Care for others. Compassion. Kindness. You are made of those, my boy." And she added, "Don't forget what I said. The food, the firewood, they were special gifts to us. If magic played any part in them, it was used to help a good boy look after those he cared about. And maybe the magic was not from the amber fish, but only the action of a kind neighbour. We'll never know, and we'll never tell." The next day, they buried Grandmother with prayers and songs. And if they spoke of the secret again, it was only between the two of them. The ending could have gone several different ways, for the tale owed as much to Stasi's imagination as to her knowledge of the old stories, and each telling was different depending on the situation and the audience. Now it was greeted with silence. The ruler was looking at her, but her expression gave nothing at all away. Would she say, "Thank you"? For the first time ever? Would she once again pepper Stasi with angry questions? Would she shout and slap her in the face? This story too, this one happening right now, might have many possible endings. "I see," the ruler said eventually. "Now let us be clear about this. You too possess an amber token, like the boy in the tale, though yours is in the shape of a bird. Tell me this, have you worn that piece of amber since you were very young? Have you enjoyed the same excellent health as that child did?" There was something new in her eyes, something that alerted Stasia to danger. Fuzzy as her head was feeling, she must focus, she must answer with care. "Lucas and I were old enough to make that climb through the forest safely.
We were not children. This is the third spring since we found Clearwater. She could not help adding, and I don't have the Amber Owl. Not any longer. It was taken from me. I understand it is locked away somewhere here at court. The ruler's lips tightened. And your health? Did wearing amber make any difference? That old tale is only a tale, my lady. I can't afford to get sick. Folk rely on me, and there's nobody to look after me. She would not say that, true as it was. I've had the same coughs and colds other folk had in our village, both before and after I wore the Amber Owl, but mostly I'm in good health. How long that would last if she and Arena were kept cooped up in the storage room without even fresh water to drink was another matter. She imagined Alexis sitting beside her, whispering, "Don't lose your temper. Answer only the questions she asks." But there was more to be said. Some folk do believe amber can ward off sickness, but it might only work if used in the right spirit, or it might depend on how the person got the amber or where it came from. Many folk dismiss the idea as fanciful. But you do not? All old tales have some truth in them. That doesn't mean every single part of them is true. That story tells us about kindness, about acting unselfishly. That boy must have grown up to be a fine man, as poor Thomas would have been if the fire had not cut his life so short. Lady Elizabeth moved then, taking two steps toward the fire, warming her hands, briefly facing away. Stasia drank the last of her water. She tried to straighten her shoulders. Her scalp felt itchy. Chances were she'd picked up lice. Dark thoughts crept into her mind. How she could bargain with this woman. One secret for a hot bath. One for a set of clean clothing. One for a meal for herself and Arena. An offer to lead the ruler's men to the hermit in exchange for freedom for herself and Flip, Arena and Lucas. She would tell a story about that feeling sometime. About how easy it would be to give in when you were tired and sore and cold and hungry. But she wouldn't give in. She couldn't. The survival of the forest was at stake, and something more, something she could not quite name, but she only had to remember the women of Hartwood Settlement speaking out that night after the fire, raising their voices to challenge the commander to know how important it was. "I'll ask this only once." The ruler turned towards Stasia. Her tone was weighty now. "And before you answer, understand that your safety and that of your companions is not guaranteed indefinitely. Will you use your knowledge and skills to guide a small party through the forest for me? To seek out this place known as the Hermit and discover whether there is indeed a deposit of amber there. No cutting down of trees, no laying waste to the land, just a journey of discovery for a good cause. Will you do that?" Stasia rose to her feet. That was a mistake. She felt dizzy, as if she might faint. She set her cup on the bench, took a deep breath. "That's the same question as before, just in different words. I don't believe we could do what you suggest without causing harm. What the commander did at Hartwood was monstrous, and he was under your leadership. I can't have anything to do with this, not even with a smaller group of people. The idea goes against everything I believe in." "Stay calm," came the voice of the absent Alexis. "Breathe, speak quietly. The forest is precious. It is eternal. Whatever may or may not lie at the Hermit, we have no claim on it. Its secrets belong to those who live there. Trees, creatures, maybe the forest folk." The ruler opened her mouth to speak, then closed it again. For just a moment, Stasia thought perhaps she had actually listened and would reconsider her plan. But no. Lady Elisabetta shook her head in a way that suggested, "What is the point of talking to you?" Then she called, "Guard!" and in a moment there was a guard in the chamber awaiting orders. Take her out to the garden and make sure she stays there until I send word. She turned to Stasia. What unfolds from here is your doing, girl. Keep that in mind. A long pause. Then she said, We will speak again. Tomorrow, I think. In the garden, she could breathe, even with a guard watching her every move. This time it was a broad, bearded man, whose belt held more knives, surely, than even a court guard could possibly need at one time. Perhaps he collected them. Perhaps when he finished his working day, this was a man who would go to the inn with his friends and enjoy telling stories over a mug of ale. Perhaps he had a wife and children at home. Did the guards have any home beyond Dragon's Keep? And if not, did they long to get away from this place? Or were they actually content to work under Lady Elizabeth's rule? Whoever was supposed to bring word was taking their time. The guard stood close by, rocking to and fro in his big boots. May I sit down on the bench? Stasia asked. The guard gave a grunt that seemed to mean yes, so she sat. There was a bird in the garden, darting about after insects, a finch, but not Flip. Perhaps that was for the best. Oh, the sunshine was good. She had been so cold. What was the ruler thinking to leave her an arena without food, water, or the means to clean their bodies and their clothing? Surely she could not intend to keep them in that place for long. Best not dwell on that now. Best enjoy whatever time she had here in the sun, among the flowers. That gardener was working again, quite close this time. Emptying a sack of compost onto a bed, preparing for planting and digging it in. She wished she could go and talk to him. Speak of something clean and healthy and good. Growing vegetables, picking fruit, watching the seasons pass. Maybe she could talk to the guard instead of imagining his story. What is your name? She asked. Mine is Stasia. He looked taken aback, as if he had not expected her to speak. My name is Marek. A pause. You must be cold. It's sunny here. Warmer. But yes, I am cold. Perhaps she was not supposed to say anything about what had happened. Perhaps she was not even meant to talk to this man. Here, put this around your shoulders. He took off his short cape and passed it over to her. The warmth brought tears to her eyes. Thank you, she said. It feels very good. I'll have to take it back later. The uniform needs to be correct. And after a moment, sorry. It's welcome for now. They waited, Marek standing alert, Stasia on the bench. She willed clouds not to cover the sun, not yet. After a while, she asked, May I walk down the garden and back? I promise not to bolt. There's nowhere to go, anyway. I'll walk with you. That way neither of us breaks any rules. Marek gave her a smile. She found herself smiling back. What a difference a simple act of kindness could make. And how sad that the ruler of the Northlands, the most powerful person in the whole country, did not understand that. Sad and terrible. Something inside that woman was chewing her up, twisting her thoughts. They walked to the spot where the gardener was working. The man straightened, leaned on his spade, giving Marek a nod. You wouldn't have an old sack or two to spare, would you? The guard asked. The young lady's been getting cold, and I can't leave my cape with her for long. Stasia gazed at a frame supporting a fine crop of runner beans and another with ripening peas. In the bed below them sprouted the feathery green tops of carrots. Some had been pulled already and lay sun-bright in a basket. Your beans look so healthy, she said, imagining the taste and feel in her mouth. The whole garden is lovely. In response, the gardener stepped out onto the soil and plucked a bean pod, splitting it open with a fingernail. Here, try them. They're good.
Good. It was the best thing she'd ever tasted.
He gave her a pod of peas to try, explaining what went into his compost heap and why it worked so well. As she listened, Stasia savoured each bite, aware of how strange it was to be here, surrounded by green, growing things, with the sun shining and two strangers being kind and courteous, while there was Irina and Lucas, and the ruler's threats, and the fact that she was half-dressed in filthy clothing and no doubt smelled like a midden. Yet Marek had let her wear his cape, and this man was offering the food he'd grown with his own hands, and neither seemed to be judging her. If only she could ask for their help. But they lived and worked at Dragon's Keep. Everyone here answered to the ruler. "These are so delicious," she said. "Thank you."
"No little dog today?"
asked the gardener. How to answer that simple yet dangerous question? She had no gift for lies.
"Not today. She did like it here. Lots of interesting smells."
"Ah, well, another time. Wait here a bit, will you?"
He went off towards a shed, further down the garden, and returned with two sacks over his arm. They were clean and uncrumpled, surely new.
"Will these do?"
"Excellent," said Marek. "Pity we can't offer you a tunic or a proper blanket, but these might help keep you warm after sundown."
"And this," said the gardener, handing her a small bag.
She did not need to look inside to know it held beans and peas, enough for two women to enjoy a small meal. "You'd best get on. Someone over there is looking for you." For a moment, before she turned around, Stasia hoped it might be Mattis, or Alexis, or Pavel, who had looked after Flip for her. But it was not. It was the black-clad man again. Stanislav. The gardener was suddenly attentive to his work, wielding his spade busily with his back to all of them. Marek swore under his breath.
"What is it?" Stasia whispered.
"Bad news," he murmured. "Do exactly as you're told. Don't try to argue. Wish I could help you, but..."
"You've helped already."
She put the sacks over her arm, clutched the little bag, and followed him forward. Stanislav was not inclined to talk. There was something forbidding about his presence. In a story, Stasia thought, this man would be a mysterious and powerful figure, someone who could be good or evil, and nobody ever knew which choice he would make. She looked for a moment into the darkest eyes she had ever seen. He might be death, for death could be both cruel and merciful.
"Come," he said, and led her away from the garden, the green growth, the sunshine, and back to the barn.
He made no comment about the things she was carrying, the sacks for warmth, the bag of vegetables. Let him not try to take these gifts of kindness, she thought. There was, as it turned out, one more gift. Stanislav waited until they had crossed the main part of the barn and were at the bolted door of the storage room. Stasia was forcing herself not to look up. She could feel Flip's presence on the rafters and could not risk drawing attention to her. Stanislav pulled the bolt open, then took something from a hidden pocket.
"For you," he said. His voice was like the tolling of a deep, soft bell. "With the ruler's compliments."
He put a small package in her hand, something wrapped in cloth. Before she could react, he had pushed her into the storage room and shut the door behind her. The bolt slid across with a grinding sound.
"Irina?"
Stasia looked one way, the other way, wondering if her friend was huddled in a corner. She looked again. There was enough light from the high window to make the truth plain. Irina was not here. A reprieve? Had they seen sense and let her return to the servants' quarters? The package Stanislav had given her felt damp and slightly sticky. She dropped the other things she was carrying and unwrapped the cloth, wondering if it contained some kind of food. At first she could not tell what the contents were, and then the light caught a glint there, and her heart jolted. "It's not real. It can't be real,"
she told herself. It's just a bad dream. It's... But it was no dream. There in her hands, laid out on the blood-stained cloth, was a severed finger. A human finger. On it, still clinging, was Irina's silver ring. 21. Alexis. The rain set in with a vengeance, punctuated by rolling thunder and sharp, bright shocks of lightning. Water cascaded from rooftops. It pooled in the courtyard. It rendered stone steps perilous and made the lighting of lamps imperative, even by day. The wind got up, gusting in, driving the birds away and whipping the lake into whitecaps. Perhaps it was just as well, Alexis told himself. Carolus had won the fight against his much heavier opponent, but had strained his right calf in doing so. He could hardly have been expected to undertake the long ride without another night's rest beforehand. Riding on rain-soaked tracks would be bad enough. The last thing they wanted was to be stranded somewhere along the way, unable to go on. So, another day, another night, and he must hope the storm would be over soon. Anxiety gnawed at him. The ruler was unpredictable, growing increasingly wayward in her decisions, apt to resort to unpalatable measures if folk did not do as she wished. If this continued, she might be incapable of presiding over the Grand Council when the time came, which made his own mission especially pressing. He considered what might have developed at Dragon's Keep in his absence. None of the other advisers would be prepared to intervene in the matter of Stasia and her companions, or the outcome of Richard's disastrous actions at Hartwood. Not one of them was prepared to challenge Elisabetta. His imagination supplied various scenarios, each of them more troubling than the last. Was he getting this out of proportion? Was he losing his grasp? Alex, he started. He'd been so deep in thought, he'd almost forgotten that Mattis was with him in the guest quarters. Carolus was resting in the adjoining chamber after Brother Erwald, the infirmarian, had rubbed salve into his leg and supplied a draught to help dull the pain. You were miles away. Troubled? You could say that. Alexis kept his voice down. Even here in private quarters with the door closed, one had to be careful what was said aloud. What if this weather keeps us for days? What if Carolus isn't ready to undertake the ride tomorrow or the next day? One step at a time, Mattis said. And remember, you can't save the world, only do your best. Carolus is tough, he can do it. And he paused. And what? I'm a fool to let this bother me? You, a fool. Nothing could be further from the truth, my friend. But it's not like you to let something disturb you this way. Chances are we'll arrive back at court and all will be well. And if not, you'll deal with it as capably as you always do. We'll deal with it. I wish I had your confidence. Alexis peered out the window again. And the ability to conjure fair weather. Mattis put a hand on his friend's shoulder. A little more silver in the hand of a certain ferryman might make a difference. I'll have a talk to him, see if he's prepared to go in the rain, provided it's not too heavy. Alexis managed a smile. Do it without any fuss. Best if our eagerness to depart doesn't arouse suspicions. The man in question knows me. I made a point of having a chat about boats and sailing, complimented him on his fine control of the vessel, which was no lie. What would I do without you? You'd cope. You always do. Maybe this is the one time I don't. It feels precarious, Alexis muttered. One full step. Your planning is faultless. You know that, Alex. We move on. What other choice is there? Mattis, too, kept his voice down. None, my friend. Absolutely none. But it depends on her. And you hold back? I wish this had not unfolded as it did. But it is what it is, and we'll deal with it as best we can. Mattis grinned. Ah, You're saying we now. That gives me some heart.
You're all heart, my friend. Alexis moved to the window. Is it wishful thinking on my part, or is the rain starting to ease? Perhaps, after all, they might be back at Dragon's Keep by tomorrow night. 22. Stasia. Her anger came out in a great scream, a flood of hot fury. There were people out there. She could hear them moving about in the courtyard. She could hear the pigs grunting. Let me out! She yelled. I want to see the ruler! Let me out! Now! At least that was what she tried to shout, but there was too much in her head, and she was sobbing, and the words that tumbled out might have sounded like nonsense. There was no response. The door remained shut. She shouted until she was hoarse, beat on the door until her hands were red raw, wept until there were no more tears in her. How dared they do this? How dared they hurt poor Irina, who had lost her only son and her home and her work, who had seen her whole world turned upside down? How dared they take a finger from a woman whose hands created the very sustenance folk depended on? Irina's baking had not only filled folks' bellies, it had been a daily reminder of home and community and harvest, of what nature gave them, of... How could anyone do something so foul? In the end, she slumped to the floor, exhausted. Nobody was coming. Nobody cared. Where had they taken Irina? Why had they done this? Why? 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 She knew the answer, of course. To make Stasia talk. To make her do what the ruler wanted. It was an evil thing. A terrible thing. It sent shivers through her whole body, a shaking she could not control, even with the two sacks wrapped around her shoulders. They felt damp. Where had that come from? In the dim light from the little high window, she examined the rough fabric and felt her stomach heave with nausea. Blood. It was on her clothing as well. Now when she looked, she saw a big dark stain on the floor with wisps of sticky straw here and there. What had happened here was surely more than the severing of a finger. What had they done? A rustling beside her, and there was Flip, a dog now, pressing against her, gazing up with sad eyes. She gathered the little creature to her chest. The warmth was a comfort. Flip might have witnessed everything, but... Was it fair to ask her for the story, to make her relive it? Was it so important to know? I have to. I owe it to Irina. Stasia shared a mind picture with Flip. Irina in the shadows of the storage chamber. Irina with the ring on her hand. Someone at the door, sliding the bolt open. What happened? She stroked Flip's ears gently. Though her hands were trembling. It was terrible, I know, but please, show me if you can. You must help her. Flip's reluctance was in every inch of her small body. Her mind pictures reached Stasia in brief flashes, as if they were too dreadful to hold for more than the space of a breath. Good girl, Stasia whispered. Brave girl. She had expected to see scenes of torture. And she did. One man held Irina, splaying her hand against the wood of the door. A second man, one she recognized, cut off her finger with such speed and precision that she guessed he did this kind of thing often. The tall, silent man. Stanislav. Stasia choked back bile. No attempt to stem the flow of blood. Nothing. They were going to leave her bleeding and go. But no, in the image, something created a distraction above the men. Both looked up, their attention caught. In that moment, quick as a darting sparrow, Irina seized the knife, one-handed from Stanislav, and plunged it into her own heart. Beyond words,
beyond thought. Stasia held Flip tight.